Welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy, and my guest today is Asen Rashid. As Chairman, CEO, and President, Asen Rashid's leadership, professional passion, singular vision, and inspired international planning and design perspectives exert a powerful influence on DDG. For more than two decades, Rashid has been instrumental in providing insight, inspiration, and strategic direction to the firm, helping to guide DDG's evolution into a premier global planning, architecture, graphics, and design company. Rashid's contributions to DDG's extensive portfolio of award-winning projects have helped solidify the firm's global reputation for design creativity and inspired architectural planning and design solutions, building upon a strong foundation of groundbreaking work in Asia, Africa, South America, and the Middle East. Rashid's aggressive pursuit of exciting new opportunities and possibilities has helped articulate the firm's innovative design vision and drive DDG's emergence as a global brand. Over the years, Rashid has been able to consistently fulfill the DDG promise to design a vision, make an impression, create an experience in innovative and exciting ways. With more than 25 years of professional experience, he has developed a dynamic and diverse professional skill set. His special talent for coordination and unique understanding of how to satisfy not only aesthetic, but also social, cultural, demographic, geographic, and environmental considerations have enabled him to successfully manage a diverse range of projects and client relationships with the same high level of skill, creativity, and vision. Above all else, it is that vision that helped Rashid take on a leadership role in expanding DDG's scope of services and elevating the firm's professional standing to a place of prominence on the world stage. DDG's One World, One Firm identity is a reflection of Rashid's commitment to that ongoing growth in the firm's signature architectural design approach, a creative blend of science, art, and intuition that molds disparate commercial, residential, recreational, industrial, and municipal components into a cohesive and harmonious fusion, reflects the same subtlety and sophistication found in Rashid's award-winning work. Today, whether he is energizing and engaging the full range of DDG's professional services, or reaffirming the versatility, adaptability, and diversity that remain among the firm's most valuable asset, Rashid's creativity, energy, intellectual curiosity, and depth of expertise have been synonymous with DDG's passionate pursuit of inspired and extraordinary design solutions. Asen, welcome to Baltimore Internet Radio.
Thank you, Dave. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell us a little bit about yourself after that bio. I want to hear it in your words.
Well, I, by trade, by profession, by education, I'm a architect and a urban planner. I grew up in Pakistan, and I started my early education in Lahore, Pakistan. And in 1981, I was a transfer student, and I pursued my architectural education in the United States. And after graduating in early 80s, I returned and I started my practice in Pakistan. And after a few years of practicing there, I decided to pursue a postgraduate degrees, and I returned to the United States in late 80s. And after graduation with a master's degree from Minnesota, I got an opportunity and a job offer and a sponsorship opportunity from local firm in Baltimore, and I joined the firm in 1987. And initially, my thought was that just to pursue the experience and to understand what the professional practice in the United States will be all about. And it was more of a interest to understand. And then after spending a few years here, I got a sponsorship from the company, and I decided to stay and prolong my career as an architectural designer. So it's been, seemed like it was yesterday, and I enjoyed my stay originally in Baltimore, loved every moment of it, and here it is about more than two decades after, I'm still here. It's been an exciting experience. It's been a wonderful city, and all the other avenues around it.
So you think you'll stick around a while?
That's what my hope is.
So tell us a little bit about the evolution of DDG.
DDG originated actually a company from South Africa. That's the roots of the firm is from. And then in about three decades plus ago, at those times, the political situation in South Africa was very dicey, as you know. And at that time, the partners, who was the founding partners of the company, they decided to move the practice into three locations. So the head office was situated in Toronto, and the branch office was established in Baltimore, and the second branch office set up in London. And so the U.S. operation grew from late 70s onward, and here we are. We've gone through some transition in the ownership, and companies start to grow. We had some contacts overseas in the Middle East. That's where we got some contacts, and some contacts obviously were in South Africa. So firms started to grow, and then some contacts came from Asia with various connections, and we started to pursue, we started to grow, and this is, the firm started to see a lot of growth in late 80s when we started to get a lot of contacts and developer relationship within the United States into variety of projects. The heritage of the firm has always been design of all kind, but we used to primarily focus on retail design. A big factor along with creating a design of retail is all the entourage and all the signage, branding, and graphics. That has been the heritage of the firm from the company grew. And then we evolved slowly into the global brand where we are today. We have practice and currently growing that practice in more than 40 plus countries. Last time we checked, we were close to 48, 49 countries in which DDG has done work in. And we continue to grow the practice. Recently, we have been working on project in places like Sri Lanka. We have been recently engaged in and got hired to do two projects in Myanmar. And we are interviewing, and actually we had some good prospects for doing some project in African continent of Ghana and also in Kenya. So we are very much focusing on evolving markets like we always have, as we already are pretty established in places like China. We have been in Chinese market for more than 12 years, which I opened that market for DDG. Then we are doing quite a lot of work in India, along with other established places like, you know, Middle East and Turkey and Latin America, Canada, and lots of other places where pretty much you hear lots of companies are working on. So we are very much growing and staying focused while we are growing not only our practice, but we are also growing into the disciplines we are emerging these practices. I mean, the company originally, as I mentioned, started as a retail design or shopping center. That has been the heritage and claim to fame for DDG. Still, a lot of people know us as we are the retail designers, which we take a lot of pride in saying. But in addition to just retail design, the firm provide a sequence and a lot of a multitude of services such as planning, urban planning, land planning included. We provide services in mixed-use design. We design hospitality and hotel-based projects. We do corporate work. We do interior design. And as I mentioned earlier, part of the heart and soul of this company has been in signage and graphics, and we grew that further into adding services like branding and whole project identities. We provide interior design services, landscape services, and last but not the least, very important, sustainability design. Sustainability being the heart and soul of every project which DDG does, and it is in the grains of every project. We'd like to build a much better world and place for our children to stay on and live through after we finish the projects, and we're all out of here.
That's a good way to end it there. I just want to back up a little bit. You might not have been privy to this because you were starting out, but how was the decision made to go to Baltimore?
Actually, it's an interesting question. There was, from the originating partners of the company from South Africa, there were some links with the Rouse Company. So the first office which was moved in U.S. It was, in fact, was a very short term, was in Colombia, where Rouse's headquarter was. And when the time came in the early days to establish a full-fledged office, Rouse was working everywhere, along with they were working on many projects in Baltimore. So the decision was made initially for looking into the potential growth of Baltimore and looking the way the plans were, looking into, you know, Jim Rouse's thoughts and other things. So the firm decided to move into Baltimore, and we have established our first office. And I still remember I was hired, and I was in that office in 20 South Charles. And that used to be called Sun Life Building, and we were on the fifth floor. We started to grow, and we started to expand, and so we gotten from a half a floor where we were to a full floor of fifth on the 20 South Charles, and then we got more space on sixth floor. Then we grew more and did not have enough space, so we took a little bit of the basement. Mm-hmm. And after we were seeing like 20-30% growth a year format. Wow. And it was quite challenging because we started a lot of business, and we got some contacts in Indonesia. That was, we are talking here, very early 90s, because we started to go into Indonesia in late 80s, 87, 88, that time. And that is the first time I traveled on behalf of the company. Was in 1988, just a year after I joined. And so we were doing a lot of work in Indonesia, and Indonesia was going through an explosive growth, and they were liking the way we do the work, and we were very proud that we were the designer and architects for the first retail mall, which they call Western style or American style shopping mall in the country, in Indonesia. So from there, we got a lot of fame, and project was a tremendous success, and we started to get more contacts and more relationships. So we set up our roots there, and we did a lot of practice in master planning. We did a lot of projects in mixed-use spaces, and along with bringing in other practices. And in during the same time, we started to evolve the business in South Africa again. That country was also booming. And then we started to get inquiries from all around. We did a lot of work in Middle East. We got a very large commission in Egypt, and we did a very large project outside Cairo. It's called Dreamland. It's a 2,000-acre development, mixed use with a lot of residential, a central golf course right close to Great Pyramids. And I started to travel a lot all over the world. South Africa was one of the big countries I enjoyed going, and North and South Africa, a lot of time we have traveled. So that start to bring a lot of practice all around. And during the same time, late 90s came in, and we got approached by, of all the places in the world, a publisher from Australia. And they were very fascinated about this little firm from Baltimore, who they hear a lot about. And they approached us, and we have some communication with them. And they offered to do a coffee table book for us. Purely as there was their business venture, and they really wanted to have us give them the rights to publish our work so they can sell it, and, you know, as a commercial venture. So we said, okay, and they we looked at who else do they, you know, do such publication work, and they basically were cream of the crops international architectural firm. They do it. So it was considered a great honor for us to be considered in such a class, you could call it, award-winning work. And we always have been a company who stayed, I would say, small to medium size, but we always have concentrated on a greatest quality of project. Quality has been the prime reason what not only myself, but other my colleagues and my partners stayed with the company, because it has put the highest standard on creating the best project we can, without any compromises. And that started to get noticed, because we started to get work literally across continents and across the country from people like a word of mouth. And that is what a lot of businesses come in, and people, I mean, because when you design projects like shopping centers, then there's a public environment. People go and visit, just like from children to parents to grandparents. And the word of mouth spreads, because a lot of those potential shopping mall customers are also developers.
Right.
And they
They see what works.
And they see what works, and they enjoy it, and they find out through the owners who designed your project. And we simply get a phone call, or we get an email that, by the way, I have visited your project in so-and-so country. And a lot of those inquiries go across countries, and that is how we sitting in Baltimore simply were reaping, rewards of the hard work and the excellence which our team produces. It's a big teamwork. It's about all the people who has passion to do quality work. So we were growing internationally, but at the same time, we were focusing very much also to create an international practice. So our human resources, our hiring practices were very much reflective of the countries we were working on. We very much believe in giving back where we take our paychecks from.
It's got to be mutually beneficial.
It's mutually beneficial, and also it's a learning. So we have established a tremendous amount of internship programs in many countries we're working. We use simply to go and make engagement through our clients to local, for instance, architecture or planning schools, and we meet their faculties, their head of department, and we have signed several memorandum of understanding. And we started to have them select one or two graduating seniors from the architecture class, best in the class, and we, at our cost, start to fly them and sponsor their visas, their training visas, J-1 visa, as some of you probably know. And we started to establish those contacts as a giving back and finding more relationship in those countries. We established that in a number of countries as we were growing practices. So the culture of DDG is that we take a lot of pride in saying is that we speak from A like Arabic to Z as Zulu, all the languages in the alphabet. I mean, we have folks in the office from South Africa who speak Afrikaans, and we have folks in the office from Philippines, and we have folks in office from Palestine and Jordan, India, and a lot of European countries, a lot of Asian countries, some from Latin American countries. And as sometimes we joke about it that, you know, we have a few people among us also from Baltimore.
A good cricket team.
we have a great cricket team, and we have a great fun softball team. Yeah, DDG is one of the members of the local architectural softball league. And we are the team which has the greatest fun. We have a great coach and who has a lot of passion about the players, and we get a lot of fun. So going back to the thing which I was mentioning, we enjoy what we do, and that is...
It's key.
That is the key. I mean, we are passionate about what we do. We enjoy, and you gotta love what you do. Otherwise, you can't create the kind of things you see around. It is not a job. If it stays as a job, then DDG is not the company for you. That's what I always say when I interview.
It's funny. That's what my father used to say. As long as when it stops being fun, get out.
Get out and. And that is what I believe in, and you got to love it. It's not something that we look at the watch that to say, oh, it's from this hour to this hour, come in and leave out and clock out. You have to believe it. You have to love it to do it. There's a lot of hard work which goes into it from all side, people who are part of the team. Everybody has their responsibility. Extensive amount of travel is involved if you are working in the team which work overseas. I mean, I could give you one example, like when I was working in Indonesia from like late 80s to mid 90s, a typical team who travels, they travel about 8 to 10 times a year. Each trip can be a minimum a week to a week and a half to 2 weeks. So you can count how many weeks you're out of the country. And then, of course, you're not only going into one place. During the trip, it always happens that I always joke with my assistant that it's almost impossible that the flight itinerary I start the trip with, I basically come back without making a change into it. So our travel agents are really part of our team because they always hear, because I'm in the middle of the trip and I hear from the office, and by the way, and we got a call from Turkey. and they wanted to meet. Mm-hmm. Can you stop over on the way back? And and it's like that. It's like a little joke that, okay, well, you're in the neighborhood anyway. If you're going to China, might as well stop over in Singapore for a two-hour meeting. And by the way, while you're there, we have a little meeting in Bombay also. Can you also handle it on your way out?
Like going to Towson to Baltimore.
Yeah, and literally we do that a lot. And so travel agent, we basically pick the travel agent who has 24-hour service because you're working around the clock. And so they hear from me and on their overnight service. And I said, okay, well, if it's Tuesday, I'm in Beijing and I got to be on a Thursday morning meeting in Singapore. Can you get me there? And how can you get me there? So a lot of flights are red eye, and we pick a flight at the end of the day because the time become extremely precious. And the last thing you want to do is use the precious daylight hours to travel. So that is going to be always trick is that you said, okay, give me a full working day in Beijing, and can I leave around 10 p.m. and get me in Singapore at 6 in the morning? So we do a lot of that. But at the same time, I think the result and why we do things, we never forget that. The thing which is with all this fun and travel and other things is, at the end, we got to be able to make a difference to our living environment. We got to be able to create something passionate. And while we are talking about, you know, places like China and Indonesia and Turkey and South Africa, we are very much doing a lot of work even in Baltimore area, outside in Maryland. Like one of the very big claim to fame, and we take a lot of pride in saying the project we did is National Harbor. National Harbor, which, I mean, everybody who is living and breathing here knows what project I'm talking about on Potomac. Sure. And that was for Peterson Company, and they are a long-standing client of ours. And we did a project many, many, many years ago in Baltimore, which everybody familiar with, Belvedere Market. And Belvedere Square was originally designed by DDG. It has been renovated many times, and we were part of many renovation projects. We did that. And another project, which is locally, any kid and every adult knows, is part of the Arundel Mill Malls, is the Egyptian-themed theater. And 24-screen Egyptian-themed theater is designed by DDG. And so we have been doing a lot of entertainment-based project. We've been doing a lot of retail-based project. We've been doing a lot of mixed-use project like National Harbor. And, you know, we have done a lot of projects which are called lifestyle centers or town centers. And we have done some of the most famous award-winning centers throughout the United States from claim to fame. There's a project outside Miami in Coconut Grove area. It's called Cocoa Walk. And DDG was the designer of and the architect of record on that project. And that is one of the projects which put the company globally on the map because it has been written about and it has been winning a lot of design awards for the company, and that gets a lot of recognition. I think at the end of the day, we have a great team, experienced team, and people love being challenged because my goal is always when I sit in a meeting, I'm going to say, we got to do today better than what we did yesterday because if you don't do that, it's a day lost.
The blueprint, I think, and you've said it, for a successful business is not only to sell products and services to your clients, but to engage in the community.
Absolutely.
To help your employees grow.
Absolutely.
And to just do what you're talking about. All these elements come in.
Absolutely.
Or else you wouldn't be a successful business.
The business we are in, of course, for you have to treat it in a many way, but at the end of the day, it's a lot about relationship. I mean, there's an old saying is, you know, in a 24-hour day cycle, the most living and active hours of the 8 hour is you are at work. And another, if you're lucky, another 8 hours you might be sleeping. And the remaining 8 hour, either you are going to work or getting out of the work. So the most waking and active hour, if you are not doing which you love doing, then you're in the wrong business. You better relook at your priorities and find something which you love. So it is about enjoying, because I know anybody who has a talent and anybody has an ability, they can figure out a way to make wages or get a paycheck in many ways. So we as a company believe that we have a responsibility to set up visions and set up the guidelines for people who are part of our team to create experience and enjoy making the world a better place in many ways, from either creating an urban environment, which is a better designed, because that is part of the mission we have, and making a difference along with that. And, of course, personal achievements and personal enhancement of our team members is part of that, which we very carefully nurture them, mentor them, so they could be part of the company. And that is one of the reasons we have a very, very long heritage of people who stay within DDG for a tremendous long period of time. And we have a whole dozens and dozens of people in the company who has been in the company for a decade and a half to two decades, or a lot of people, as I said, lifers like me, who has been here for 25, 30, 25, 28 years. And we love it. We enjoy it because it's not a job. It's a passion. And we love, currently I was, we just got a phone call and I got a, meeting out in Dubai and on a Saturday. And after that, I took a quick trip to Turkey and we were talking to some people, and we have a few new projects on the horizon, which got signed and agreed upon in that 3-day trip. So we feel that there's a lot of opportunities, and we a lot of time become very selective and picky to choosing those opportunity and bring them back to Baltimore, because that is part of growing the business. We enjoy being in Baltimore, and currently we are looking into our leases up, and this has always become a question, where do you gonna go? And we are very much believer in being in Baltimore, staying in the city. So we are at the board of directors level has decided to look into the properties within the city of Baltimore, because that is where we want to stay.
Well, Austin, like I said, that is really the blueprint for a successful business, the passion too, especially the passion. And it sounds like that it's a great place to work. And which brings us to a part of the program that I want to address, and that is to build international business for Baltimore businesses. Now, you've obviously done that. So if you can give some input on how that's done.
Very interesting questions, because that has been asked to us in a lot of venues, even from the people who interview us, and say, how do you do work all over the world being in Baltimore? And there is multiple ways, and one way DDG continue to do, and obviously that in the markets where we are, we continue to get repeat business, but there's certain methodology which we use, and one of the methodology is communicate, and more communicate. And what does that mean? It means we look for venues, and we look for opportunities very strategically. How do we go and network and meet more people who may want to hire us? And one of the means we use is we use a local Baltimore-based public relations outfit. Wonderful people, P.R. Weiss, and Ray is the leader there. And under his discussion and leadership, and there's Ray's colleague, Jessica, they are both wonderful, amazing people. And they deal with me and several of my partners, one of our vice president, Valerie Katafa, and my other partner, Dustin Watson, who basically this people of three, we guide them through. And we try to get into many opportunity to get publications globally and locally, that how do we get the word out that what we are doing. It's not advertising, but it's communicating about what we do and what kind of exciting work we're doing. Part of that, our mission is that we network through conferences, and we look for venues not only in United States where it could be a trade show. We look for trade shows throughout the world in the targeted market. We look for trade show within the United States. We look for trade shows in Istanbul, Turkey. We look for trade show in Jakarta, Indonesia, in Beijing, China. There's a trade show coming up in Mexico City next week. I'll be there. There's a trade show in the middle of November in Cannes, France. This is a global European retail venue. So we will be having a presence there. So we basically target, we do a lot of reading and to see which venues potential clients travel to. And we start to build our network into those places. So that is one way I recommend other businesses to look for, to see if they're going to grow globally or if they're going to get a presence out there. Look for a overall strategy and start to build a framework. Our framework is to communicate, because like, you know, part of the thing we do is we design building, we design shopping centers, we design master plan communities, but first thing is, how do you get those opportunities to do all of those things? How do you get in front of the people, your competitors, that you are better than your competitors? Because that is part of getting the assignment. It's like the chicken and the egg syndrome. And what we've been doing, we've been networking for tremendous amount of years. I mean, this is a global world. So I tell everybody, please don't forget about it. You are living in Baltimore, but that doesn't mean that your reach is within Baltimore. This is the world. I mean, I'm sitting here talking to you in an internet radio, which is going to be listened and heard all over the world. The same way the media is extremely powerful. We are not only, doing the work in office, but we are on all the media. We have a social media group in the office, which is very much looking into Twitter feeds. We do Twitter feeds of our accomplishment. We do have a corporate Facebook page, so they communicate through that venue. We have corporate LinkedIn page, and we have all the partners' LinkedIn pages. So we have not just the website, but we deal with all angles of the social media. We go into magazine, publication, radios, just like I'm in. The main objective is to get the word out to as far away lands as possible in multitude of ways. But the key to is do not do it haphazardly, but do it in a very thought out strategy. And that is what we do at DDG. So we are looking for, like, we are very much focusing this year in Africa and Middle East to grow the business market there. So we are looking into some strategic alliances there. We are very fortunate that we are building a practice, and I feel very proud of saying that myself and my team, which is currently in operation in DDG, is looking into visions that has never been looked at DDG before. And we are focusing at the business side, and we are looking at also the networking side in a whole different light than previously looked at DDG. We are building partnerships formally. We are building establishment relations formally throughout the world. And those relationships are built by networking through organizations which are equivalent to our professional organizations. So my suggestion to people is that don't just go out and try to, you know, say that, oh, I'm going to show up one time in a trade venues in, you know, in London, and then, hey, I had a good time, I had a party, and that has come back. But that is not how we do it. You have to do it consistently. You have to do it regularly. You have to go after years after years after years, because sometimes it happens that you go there 2, 3, 4 times, you still doesn't get a job, but 6th time you go, you get a job, and then every time you go, you get 2 more jobs. Right. And that is what we've been doing. We are investing into it. We are like this show in France where we go in Cannes. We've been going more than 18 years, because that is a market. We study it, and we said, okay, where the clientele is going to come from. So that is a very careful study and a thorough business vision. We have been doing more documentation of that. And if we are going to be building more relationship and, as we say, more boots on the ground, we are setting up global offices for the company, and that is my mission, is to get more presence of the firm throughout the United States, which is a big country in itself, but throughout the various parts of the globe.
You talk about Twitter and you talk about LinkedIn. Give me a little evolution of how, when you started out 25 years ago, it wasn't Twitter and it wasn't LinkedIn, mm-hmm. and how did you build up? And then talk about one of your first big clients from Baltimore that you got.
Absolutely. That's an interesting question. Yeah, before the Twitter and before the LinkedIn and the Facebook world, I mean, we grew up with the world when there was just faxes. And I remember we were living in the world before the FedEx and UPS were doing overnight deliveries, very, very remote. And when those things came in, that basically challenged it, because people wanted a package next day delivery. And so we basically used to say, okay, well, we will send you some stuff. Give us 2 days. And people say, no, I overnighted. I wanted to talk to you tomorrow, 8 a.m., because what you're going to send. So the world has changed, and it is at a very high pace. And going back to your thought about, I mean, like I give you an example of our local clients, and we have deal with many clients in Maryland area, many clients locally in Baltimore area. We were engaged in like some U.S. clients, we take them to overseas a lot of time, and a lot of time overseas clients come with us to United States. So there are a variety of linkages depending on the typology of the project, which comes in. For instance, I give you some specific examples, like this project which I mentioned we worked on, which is in Arundel Mills Movie Co. Theaters. That is a client who was born and raised in Persia, in Iran. And he met us in a conference, in a trade show, in Beverly Hills. And he enjoyed looking at our projects, and he enjoyed talking to some of our partners. And he says, I wanted to create a memorable venue where people start to come and enjoy watching movie than just to say they have a black box, they're going to watch a movie on a big screen. Right. So he had found us, and we basically worked with him to create very thematic movie environments. And that took us, took a notice of a client who visited us out of South Africa. And they said, oh, I saw that project and I would like to do a similar theme project. And they wanted to talk to us. A client who became a client from India, they visited Baltimore and they enjoyed watching movies in the Movie Co. Theater. And we did a project for them also in India. So it's like a world which has doors opening from all side and communication, because now the travel is such a tool that not only you're traveling physically on an airplane, but your message is traveling with a lightning speed on the Twitter feeds and on the Facebook pages and also on the LinkedIn pages, that nothing gets unnoticed.
And it stays out there forever.
And it stays out there forever, so you better be careful what you're saying or writing, because it's never going to go away. And if somebody thinks that hitting the delete key means that it's going to be deleted, I really need to rethink through what you think is delete is.
That's right.
Because it's never is a delete.
Uh-huh. Talk about, in terms of your 25 years, the personal contacts are most important. And before all this Twitter technology here, mm-hmm. when you went into another country, you had to probably do a lot of research, because you had to know their customs and, more importantly, their business customs. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes, that's a very, very interesting question. We do a lot of study. We do go through, you know, some general thing. But at the same time, as I mentioned, that a lot of us in DDG are from someplace else.
Right.
So a lot of those looking into the foreign faces and listening to the tone of a different language is not too foreign for us. We have currently, like we're doing very much work in China. When we started to work in China, we had been invited to China. And as I mentioned earlier, that about the coffee table book an Australian publisher did for us. And that book is sold throughout the world. That was an interesting introduction for DDG in China, because a developer from Shanghai was in a bookstore, and he was looking for, you know, new development projects, and he picked up a copy of a book which was DDG's book, and he picked it up and he bought it, and we get, in those days, a fax message.
Sure.
That somebody said, well, I picked up a copy of this book from a bookstore in Shanghai, and I liked some of your work, and I would like to invite you to come and talk to me because I have a project for you. So we looked at into it, and I flew over to China, and that was, as we say, in 1999, and the rest is history. And we built the business, and from that one phone call or one fax and one client to such a solid business that when in 2008 economic crisis came in and the banking crisis came in the United States, we looked into it, and we were having business slowing down and stopping. And part of the building the business is to have the safeguards in business to see, because you don't just build the business for the good times and the good economic days, but you have to have safeguards against those what ifs. And we had diversification as part of globally is our what if scenario. If the business slows down in Indonesia, we have a business opens up in Egypt or in South Africa. If the business slows down in South Africa, business kicks back into the United States. And the business in the United States in 2008, when it slows down, we fully cranked out the business in Asia and especially in China. And I think DDG's continued to growth and continued to be successful has a lot to do with that vision and that thinking or diversification. And we, in some months, I remember in 2009 and 2010, when we were doing more than 90% or 95% of work just in China, just to stay, you know, constantly billing and getting the revenues in. But right now we are down back into in a solid business sense is, you know, 6-7 other countries we are doing work in the United States where the revenue comes in. We are looking at business coming from, you know, Indonesia. We are looking at business from China. We are looking at business coming from Venezuela. We are looking at business coming from Colombia and also coming from Africa along with from Dubai, Turkey, and a few other places in between. So part of this relationship building is to not only to build the relationship, but to keep the relationship. And knowing the culture, knowing their custom helps to keep those relationships. Like in China, the business deals get done over dinner. And just like, you know, the old ways of saying is that in USA, a lot of business gets done on the golf courses.
Yes.
So it's very much like you have to see where clients want to, you know, talk to you. And if they invite you for dinner, this means it's a good sign. You go and you stay with them and enjoy, you know, talk over dinner. They wanted to socialize with you to see. They just don't want to sign a contract with you that you can do the job. They already know you can do the job. That's why you are sitting there on the other end of the world.
Right.
So working in Indonesia is very different because socially there it is less dinners involved than in China. In China, every night when we go, there is a big dinner and which has probably, you know, sometimes 20 people, sometimes 40 people. And you are only there, only one and maybe two people. But that is their sign of appreciation. And as sensitive as, you know, knowing the culture is, how do you hand your business cards to somebody? You stand up and you shake your hand, and which side, which hand you're going to hold your business card, and which hand they're going to give you the business card. So there are all of those things you got to know so you can't and you should not offend somebody.
Yes.
Because that is part of being sensitive and knowing all of those things.
Right. Well, that's basically the gist of my question was that it's if you don't know their custom, their business custom, then you can easily offend people. When you first started out, and you didn't have all these international employees, it was a different learning skill going into a different country and then having to do all this research with just people that have a skill of one country, which is America, let's say.
Sure.
Like that.
No. Sure. It is actually, I tell you, the opposite side of it also, that there are some of our people who are were senior and we are very cautious in who fits in which culture. There are some people who we prefer to work in certain countries because of those kind of a cultural nuances. They're obviously with a good sensitive look to it. We try to avoid those phone calls in the middle of the night when in one unfortunate case, one of the client called and he said to one of my senior partners and he said, can you have me work with somebody else? And they mentioned somebody's name. They said, I'm sorry, he doesn't get it. And can you appoint somebody else? And can you do that immediately? Because otherwise, you may not have us as a client. And we said, well, we did not see any signs coming, but we were very quick in making those changes, and they were very happy clients afterward.
Sure.
So the sensitivity a lot of time plays a major role, and we got an oversensitive and very careful in selecting some people because there are certain clients with every mood they have a different way. What could be acceptable as a joke in one country may be considered as more like a insult in the other places. So it's very important that we do a lot of research, we do a lot of reading, we watch a lot of TV or movies and get ourselves as much multicultural education and sensitivity training in our own way so we can avoid those things. And part of what I do and my team, which I take a lot of pride in, saying that they are a very talented group of people. And I am surrounded by some great advisors who are very intelligent, and they keep me on the check all the time. Because many times I don't know which time zone I'm on, and especially when you're coming back from a trip and you're just, as I said, sometime in the past, as you're just taking a stop to get your laundry done and you're back on the plane again. But, requires, of course, a very understanding family, which I'm very proud to say that I have. And my daughter and my wife and I continue to Skype throughout so we can see each other's faces and remember each other. So technology can do wonderful things. Right. And our business card, when we printed our recent cards about a few years ago, we took off the fax numbers totally because it's such an obsolete technology. And so we basically have a Skype address instead of everybody. So that's the sign of the changing time.
Yeah, you remember the time when you would call somebody and they still had their fax on? So
yeah.
You would call them. You would be on the same line?
So that's part of the changing. Yeah. Now you deal with and make links at the LinkedIn. But I think the personal touch and the warmth of a conversation across the table or across a dinner table or however, that will never go away, because that level of perception, which somebody wants to have a comfort level, especially in a business like ours, which is a service-based company, is extremely important, because we are, at some extent, as I say, we are selling the dreams. We are selling the promise to create a dream for somebody. It's not creating a widget. It's not creating a car or a motorcycle that this is going to cost you $20,000. And this, the one I'm going to do it exactly like that. So people are trusting us with a lot of their thinking and a lot of their vision. So it is our responsibility to be creative in a very challenging environment to deliver them.
Well, it sounds like you've established strong relationships with your client. Just the fact that a client would come to you and say, I don't really like that guy. They could have just said, I don't like you. And just say goodbye. It's very competitive out there and something like that. But and to back up a little bit, when you're talking about being in different places when the economic climate is different, that's important. That's part of a business plan. That's part of a blueprint to project that and saying, well, this looks like this is coming, so we'll stay in here. And there's little pockets of countries now that are doing quite well, like Croatia is doing quite well. And you have to be aware of all that for a sustainable, growing business.
Absolutely. I think that's a very, very much of the line of what part of, as I say, my job is as the CEO and the president of the company. That is, and as I a lot of time tell people, the people say, what do you do? And I said, I do everything which nobody else wants to do, and which is in one way is sort of a looking into those, and I do a lot of reading, I do a lot of watching, I do read a lot of business magazines, and I watch a lot of business shows, and a lot of which I enjoy, and part of the evaluation is the world is obviously it's always been very political. And now you mix the politics with economic. In order to have a successful business, you not only got to sway with the trend, but you got to make an effort to stay one or two steps ahead of the trend, because whatever is hot today is going to eventually cool down tomorrow. And you wanted to make sure that you're out of there or you are hedged against it before it cools down.
Right.
And part of this thing, like you mentioned about pockets of various country, that is very, very true. Because we are involved in what we call initial design, or what we call in our trade is a concept work, which is where the first line on a new project is drawn. if there is less and less of that kind of a request, we see, we know the market is cooling off. And that is an indicator because a project cycle takes a few years from the drawing the first line to developing that idea to, you know, bringing it to for a contractor to bid on it and start the construction. A project of any decent size will take a 2 years to 3 years in that whole thinking process before the groundbreaking takes. So this means anything which if a contractor is slowing down, but we are busy, we know the construction is going to see a positive uptake. But if a design firm is slow, this means our pipeline is going to get dried out. And that is we keep a very close eye on our pipeline. And so if we start to see a cooling down sign like we start to see in around 2010, a little bit out of China. So we were very watching carefully and say, okay, where do we need to go? So we accelerated our effort and start to study what is happening in neighboring countries very close by into, you know, Taiwan, and started to look into Singapore, started to look into Malaysia, started to look into Thailand, started to look into Indonesia. So we started to look to see what, where can we have relationship and where we can get some more work to start to offset the slowdown in China. Similar thing, we start to look into our contacts in Turkey, and we saw some sign, and we put more resources in those market, but we stayed in China, and now China, after 2 years, a little slow, is back to being hot again. We are seeing the signs, a lot of phone calls, a lot of emails are coming back again. People want to hire us for new work. So we are very watchful now, along with keeping those signs of hot and lukewarm. We are looking in to see where else we're going to go, where part of my strategy is, you know, we have done 46, 48 countries, where else we're going to go? So we are looking to new places. As part of the new places is, you know, we added Sri Lanka and Myanmar into our portfolio, and we are doing work with some corporations. So we are very strategically looking into this show where we're going to go, and we have never attended a show of real estate networking in Mexico before. So now we will be doing that, and I'm going to go and observe the market and looking into some relationship to see we will be going there again next. So part of this thing is sustaining what we have, making sure we are solid there so we are financially stable, then projecting out to see where other potentials are coming from, and that's the second part of what I do and we work with my team. And the third part is projections out in those areas where we haven't tried before, but we want to. So those are the kind of a three main things, which is part in my thinking on a very regular basis. So we basically wanted to see that when the work comes into the design studio, generally that call has come to me or one of my other business development associates maybe 6 months ago. It takes about 6 months in our business to bringing a project from a phone call to
fruition
to when it start to get a design project, because you have to meet them, you have to convince them you're the right company, you have to draft a contract, you have to negotiate the contract, you got to get the information, you got to visit the site, you got to get your mobilization advance, because business is business. You got to make sure you're financially you are there. You're not there just to give them pretty pictures. So it takes about average about, I would say, 5-6 months before the first phone call to a project goes to a design studio. So we are very aware of that pipeline factor, how we're going to do that. So that is part of the very future planning.
On that note, we'll conclude this. I enjoyed hearing about DDG and part of our Blueprint for International Business. Thank you, Asen. Thanks for coming in. I've been talking to the Chairman, CEO, and President of DDG, Asen Rashid. I hope you come back, because this is an ongoing program.
We really appreciate, Dave, to inviting me for this venue, and we look forward to having a continual contact and see. And if anybody needs to get in touch with me or DDG, it's very simple. They can go to our website, ddg-usa.com, and that's the easier way. And then you can find the links to our Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and all the other social media. And my email address is arashed@ddg-usa.com, or You can get into our contact page, which is info@ddg-usa.com. And it's been a pleasure to be here, and I look forward to seeing if we can continue to do this more and communicate with promoting Baltimore. It's been a wonderful experience for me, and looking around my other associates, and they have been enjoying their time there. And we have been very much able to bring a lot of people from various parts of the world and made them the residents of Baltimore in past 25 years on. So
that's terrific. Thanks again. You've been listening to Baltimore Internet Radio. I'm Dave Custy.